Hello, and welcome to the RSNA 2020 edition of The Reading Room, the Diagnostic Imaging Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Whitney Palmer. Today, I am joined by Dr. Nina Kotler to talk about artificial intelligence and how it has appeared throughout this year's annual meeting for RSNA. Dr. Kotler, who is Associate Chief Medical Officer for Clinical AI at Radiology Partners, shared her thoughts with us not only about how AI continues to improve efficiency and workflow, but also about the next steps with the technology, including deployment and consolidation. And as we round the corner to 2021, she offered insights on what the future could hold with these tools.
All right. Well, thank you again for taking the time. And, you know, when we think about AI in the RSNA 2020 rubric, you know, this year, what should radiologists really be looking at? You know, are there overall themes when it comes to artificial intelligence that they should be, you know, making sure they take a point of?
Yeah, I think the thing to think about is the maturity. Where are we in the rollout of this technology? We went through a whole period 3-4 years ago where there was all kinds of talk about replacing radiologists. And I do think we're over that now. And that to me speaks to the maturity of where we are in the technology. We're still very early on, but we're at least over that crazy hype of the AI can do anything. AI is going to replace radiologists. We're realizing that that's not the case. There's things that AI is good at, which, you know, there's things that computers are good at, and there's things that humans are good at. So you can notice today, whether it's at RSNA or just in discussions with AI and vendors, no one's talking about that anymore. Everyone's talking about how the two can work together. They're talking about radiology efficiency and how AI can improve efficiency, because that's more of a business case that people can, you know, quote, pay for, as opposed to, you know, we're just better quality or we're as good as RADs. You kind of have to have both. Quality is the baseline. You have to either maintain or improve quality, but then do something else that will allow people to pay for it. So I think that there's an improved maturity. Also, in looking at some of the talks and the vendors and what people are speaking about, that part is matured too. It used to be that everyone talked about one single narrow AI application with one component. So you might have an AI vendor that did detection, and that detection was for one thing. And now we're starting to see that become more robust. And what I mean is we're seeing AI vendors that will have 10 detection algorithms on a head CT or on a chest X-ray. I even know one vendor that has 140, maybe it's like 127. I can't remember the exact number, but it's so big that you're like, wow, that is far more of a robust offering than just looking for pneumothorax. So those two things together, I think, show that we're a little more mature in the space. And with that comes some consolidation in the industry.
All right. So in addition to that, are there other themes, you know, you've touched on some, but are there any other themes kind of, I guess, looking forward that radiologists should pay attention to?
The things that I'm looking at right now, I'm looking at how do you deploy these frameworks? Because now we all know what they're capable of doing. We all probably have use cases that we think we could use and deploy. We're starting to get to that point where we understand what the business case is and maybe we could pay for it. And that's still a maybe for most groups. But at least it's coming to a place where that's possible. So what do you think about next? And that's deployment. How do you deploy these things in your actual practice and then do it at scale? Because you're not going to want just one AI algorithm from one vendor. You might want a few AI algorithms from different vendors. And how do you actually make that work? And when you think of deploying it and the orchestration that goes along with it and getting RADs involved, people, because they haven't had experience in that, don't really know what to look for. And so there's more of that kind of discussion about how do you orchestrate the back end component to get the right images to the AI system? How do you talk to your RADs about using the AI system? How do you educate them on where AI is going to be right and where it's going to be wrong? Because they need to be the experts in that area. So more discussion about bias, more discussion about generalizability, and how to check to see the accuracy of those algorithms in your own clinical space. That's a really important thing to look at now. The other thing that I'm looking at personally, and I've gotten really involved or really interested in it, is the whole clearance process through the FDA, because that's evolving. The technology is evolving so quickly that our regulatory components need to be able to keep up with it. And right now, what the clearance offers for AI is a set point in time in which a product is cleared. So let's say you have, I don't know, a head CT algorithm that detects intracranial hemorrhage. You do a test, you train it, you validate it, and validation is the process of improving it over time till you get to a point where you think, okay, the accuracy is good. And now I want to roll this out and prove to the FDA that my accuracy is good. You do that on a test set. The FDA then clears your algorithm at that point in time on that test set. The whole idea of machine learning is that an AI algorithm improves over time the more information you give it. But right now, you can't get that cleared. What you have cleared is the one algorithm you created at that point in time, and that's what you have to roll out, and that's the only thing people can buy. And what we need to evolve to is two things. One, we need to evolve to a system where the AI algorithm has the ability to learn and improve over time and have that be cleared. And then the second thing is we need the ability for us to roll out or clear AI algorithms more in bulk. Because you know how I said that we're becoming more mature in the technology, and instead of just having one finding on one modality, we're having multiple. But you have to clear each one individually. So how does this group that has 120 algorithms on a single chest x-ray get them all cleared? Like, it would be ridiculous to try to do that through the process we have now. So I think there's more information that's coming out about pre-certification, the FDA. There's more algorithms that are coming from international groups who have CE clearance or clearance from another regulatory center that are coming to the US. So I think that for me, I'm quite interested in the FDA clearance process and how that's evolving.
That definitely sounds like there's going to be a lot more development in that area. But then, you know, kind of thinking, I guess, about this within the context of RSNA this year and with all of what we've talked about as a backdrop, what are some of the sessions that have, I guess, been most important or most impactful, the ones that people should not be missing, you know, in the evenings when they're watching or whenever they have the opportunity?
Yeah, and what is great about this year is that all of these sessions, you've got a whole bunch of sessions that are on demand. And so actually, as of, even though RSNA didn't officially open till Sunday, they were available on Saturday. So I started watching them on Saturday. I watched a whole bunch on Sunday. I'm watching them all again after my regular workday. And all of the regular sessions that are scheduled, they're also recorded. And so you get a chance to watch them all later. I haven't watched them all yet. There's so much content and there's a lot of really good content, but it's very easy to filter through. You can search by the day, you can search on demand, you can search by a keyword, which artificial intelligence is one of those. So if you look in the artificial intelligence lectures, there's a few that I thought were really great. I can give you the names of a few that were my favorites so far if you want.
Sure.
Okay. But it is RC254, and that was a lecture with Harry Jaw, Hugh Harvey, and Luke Oakden Rayner. And what I find are some of the best sessions are with the best speakers, because regardless of the topic, the speakers are so good that you just always want to hear those sessions. So that one's a fantastic one. Hugh Harvey talks about maturity of AI technology, mergers, acquisitions, and disappearances, and where we stand with that, which I found really interesting. There was also a great one by Daniel Rubin that is about challenges and strategies to making AI reliable in clinical practice. Paul Chang, I mean, I love Paul Chang. I think he's very thoughtful in terms of where we're moving in the future. And he's always kind of recommended things that I think are very basic things that we should be doing. that you could deploy now? And he talks about our infrastructure. He's talked about this before, but I don't think a lot of people have actually done that. So there's another lecture by him that talks about infrastructure and how to make that work. And then there was one I saw the other day called The Essentials of Machine Learning, Study Design and Algorithm Validation, What Doctors Need to Know. It seems like it would be a really technical lecture, and some of it is, but there was one discussion by a Dr. Forgani, was the middle discussion, that was just, I thought, fantastic. It cleared up a lot of things for me about the terminology we use and that how we should be using it in the right way, the way that data scientists speak, which I think is really important. If you're trying to communicate with data scientists, we should be speaking the same language. That was a great one, and one people might not otherwise think about. And then just a couple others. Kurt Langlotz talks more about this medical imaging and data resource center that's called the MIDRC. And that's a way that we can have a bunch of labeled exams that are available for everyone. And so they're creating a group of, I think, 60,000 labeled COVID exams. And the goal is to expand that beyond COVID over time. So all of those were really great ones. And then just one last one, because I love David Larson, and he always speaks really eloquently about ethics. And he did a really great lecture about the ethics of AI and data sharing.
Gotcha. That's quite a list for people to choose from. And you've kind of provided a bit of an overview, but from the ones that you've seen so far, are there certain takeaway messages or little nuggets of knowledge that you think people should kind of have in their back pocket when it comes to thinking about AI and where this part of radiology is going?
Yeah, I think it shows again that we're getting a bit more mature. We're realizing that this is something that we need to do together. And when I say together, I mean we need everyone in radiology to be educated about this, to get involved. The radiologists should get invested in this and learn about how and why it's working, because we're going to be the ones that need to be the experts in the future. We need to share our data so that vendors have access to it and that globally we can make improvements. Because if we're not working together with radiologists, radiology practices, academic practices, and vendors, we're not going to get the outcome that is best for our patients.
Well, then on the flip side of all of that is, has there been anything that's been surprising to you, discussions that have kind of, piqued your interest or just kind of maybe come out of the blue in some respects?
There's an area that I'm very interested in that I think relates to AI, but in a different kind of way. And those are discussions about diversity, inclusion, and unconscious bias. Bias is a part of everything we do in AI, and understanding why that is means we're going to understand how the algorithms work. But you could expand bias in our discussion about bias to something more global, because the bias doesn't come from the AI algorithm. The bias comes from the underlying data, and that underlying data comes from us, right? We're all naturally biased people. It's a human nature characteristic. There's nothing to be embarrassed about. We all have it. And what we need to do is be able to recognize it so that we can take action to do something greater. And to me, I like to think about that in the setting of diversity and inclusion or belonging. I think naturally we naturally sort of tend toward people that look and act and feel like we do, because there's a camaraderie there. And so we pick people we want to work with that look, act, and feel and think like us. And when you do that, you don't get the diversity of perspective that you would otherwise get, which is something that is really needed in an area where you need to innovate. I don't think that you could innovate with a single group of people with a single perspective. Innovation means expanding that perspective to something much greater. And in order to do that, you need a diversity of people, you need a diversity of thought processes. And so that whole idea of bias, which is built into AI, I thought it was really interesting that they had a bunch of talks about it this year at RSNA, completely unrelated to AI, but really in speaking about our unconscious biases, how do we recognize them? What do we do about them? And how do we use that to change the environments in which we're working and living?
Well, given that bias, you know, like you said, is inherent when it comes to AI in some ways, what are some ways that I guess maybe radiologists can counteract that or work against it kind of going forward now that there's been this robust discussion about it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's really hard. That's the hard problem, is a lot of it is unconscious. We don't know we're doing it. So step number one is recognizing that we all have it. Not, you know, blaming ourselves for it. Because we all, there's nothing we can necessarily do about having it. But in recognizing it in a way that says it's okay that we have this if we take action and think about it. So what do you do? There were a bunch of resources that they gave, and that's one of the great things about lectures like this is you can capture all the resources, and you don't have to do it with a camera anymore because you're not there at the lecture. You could write it down, you can pause the lecture and do that. So I took a lot of notes on different resources. One is the Harvard Implicit Bias. There's a Harvard Implicit Project, and there's the Implicit Association Test that is done by Harvard, and you could just Google that. I've actually taken a couple since I heard about it. And what it does is it tells you what your unconscious biases are. And it does it by these association tests where you can do it on all different kinds of biases from race, race, color, ethnicity, age, sexual orientation, women in the workplace, science. So you can take all of these individual modules and it has you associate things together and it sees how quickly you do that. So you see a picture of someone who is older and you have a word and you have to associate those together, and someone who's younger and a word, how do you associate them? How quickly you do it tells our internal biases. So I would recommend to anyone just going online and doing some of them. There's probably like 20 of those, and they each take maybe 10 minutes to do. And it teaches you where our biases are in things that you might not otherwise expect. So once you recognize it, then you can kind of do something about it. The doing it part is hard. I was listening to a book on tape about our emotions, and they said, if you feel really good about something right away, it's probably an underlying bias. And so maybe at that point, catch yourself, take a step back and try to think about it more logically. Switch the roles around and said, all right, if you're thinking about, I'm interviewing someone and, you know, it's a 40, 50 year old woman that's white and Jewish and, you know, it's just like me. Maybe, and I think they're awesome. Instead, switch that to someone who's completely different, a black male Christian with whatever, and see if you feel the same way about it. Try to switch up how you're thinking about things. And if you have that same internal feeling, then great, go with it. But you might not. And if you don't, that's because you have an underlying bias that you're just not recognizing.
Well, given that, you know, like we said, there's been so much discussed about AI this year, on the flip side of all that's been offered, is there anything that you had hoped would kind of appear during the conference that you have not yet seen?
Yeah, let's think. I haven't gone through everything yet, and the conference does go through Saturday, I think, this year, so there's still more content to come. What have I not seen as much? The thing that's been harder for me this year about RSNA being virtual is that generally when I'm at RSNA, I am walking around the floor. I'm running into people. I'm talking to different vendors. And through those discussions, you kind of see someone else asking questions and presenting something that makes you think, oh, well, that's really interesting. And I never thought of that. Let me go see what they're doing. And that bumps you into something else. That kind of interaction has been, it's harder when it's virtual. There is a platform to connect with vendors, and they've tried to make it really robust. In some ways, I think it's great, but you don't get that interaction in that you would normally by just kind of bumping around from vendor to vendor and seeing what people are talking about. I do miss that. In terms of content that I'm missing, there hasn't been a lot. There's been a nice combination of things that have been very general and basic with some things that are new. And I think that's what you need at RSNA. You know, I've seen the general basic stuff. I may not need that, but someone else does. And then there's some very specific things that to me are really interesting, but to someone else they don't care about. And I think you need that breadth of content to be interesting to everyone.
All right. Well, then based on what you have seen, and again, I understand you haven't looked through all of it yet, but based on what you've seen so far, what do you think the industry can anticipate with artificial intelligence going into 2021? You know, you spoke earlier about deployment and clearance issues, but what can we, you know, think about as far as other development or trends that people should keep an eye open for?
Yeah, I think that we are going to be talking more about platforms and how to actually deploy these. So there are certain platforms that AI technology can sit on because it's hard to integrate with each individual vendor. So I think there'll probably be, now that's been a discussion for a year to two, a couple of years now, but I think that's going to become bigger now that people are going to be start thinking about deploying them, because what people have been doing now is maybe doing a pilot with one AI vendor because we're not so mature. So there's a very small group of people that are actually using AI. I do think that will increase a bit. And so talking more about platforms is going to be important. And how do you orchestrate? Because you may want to send it to one AI vendor who has a ChestCT algorithm that will look for a pulmonary nodule, but then maybe send it to another that's going to evaluate that same ChestCT algorithm for coronary artery calcification. And how do you orchestrate those two things together? That kind of discussion, I think, should become more important. The other thing that I think we're coming into is if we look at the Gartner hype cycle in terms of maturity of AI technology, I think we're on the consolidation curve. We've gone through the hype. We're coming down to consolidation. And while there's still a lot more money that's coming into AI and so you still see new vendors, or we're seeing more international vendors come to the US, which makes it seem like everything's new, I feel like under the covers, consolidation is starting to happen. So you need to figure out, like, how do you pick a winner? You know, like if you choose someone now, how do you know they're gonna be around in a year or two? We really don't. I mean, that's a very difficult to do. So some knowledge about who the winners are going to be, or at least placing some bets if you're going to be buying some technology, hopefully you're betting on the right group. Those would be the main things for upcoming. Oh, and then the one other I would suggest is algorithms that are more robust. We're going to see more of those algorithms, like the 120 things you can find on a chest X-ray, but you'll see more globally.
All right. Well, Dr. Kotler, I appreciate your taking the time today. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dr. Kotler, for joining me. And thank you for listening to The Reading Room. And as always, visit www.diagnosticimaging.com for current coverage of RSNA 2020 and the latest in radiology news.